All right, Ray Dittinger joins us every single, Monday, except for next week, because we always want to get Ray the day after an Eagles game. He's with us right now. Ray Dittinger is brought to us by Verizon. Phones were not made to be broken, but life happens. So when your phone breaks, Verizon's got you. Trade in any phone at your local Verizon store in any condition guaranteed. Get a great deal on one of their best 5G phones with unlimited ultimate. The Diddy, a Hall of Famer, Ray Dittinger. Ray Diddy, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Joe. How are you doing?
Excited, Ray. We got a football team here, Ray. So, Ray, let's get just open-ended question here. Your assessment after last night. Biggest thing that stood out to you from last night's game, what is it?
Patience to stay with the running game. You know, it's funny. At this point, you almost the defense is almost a given. You know, you just you're almost saying that I'm taking the defense for granted now because they're playing so well week after week. But the thing that stuck with me last night was, let's face it, the offense didn't look great coming out, and it took a while to get the running game going. But credit to Kellen Moore and Nick Sirianni that they stuck with it, and. Boy, in the second half, you saw it take over. And that's the thing with the running game. Coaches just have to be patient with it. You know, it's not necessarily all going to be right there in the first series. I mean, you kind of take physical advantage. You know, when you have an offensive line like this, you just wear people down. If you have a big running back like this, you wear people down. And you just stay with it. And in the second half, it pays off. And boy, did it ever in this game. And I think one of the things that you saw was the Thursday night effect of this game. Because last Sunday, you know, the Eagles and the Washington had two very different kinds of games. The Eagles had a pretty easy go of it down in Dallas, to the point where in the second half, a lot of their starters were sitting on the bench drinking Gatorade. Whereas Washington had a four-quarter toe-to-toe bloodbath with Pittsburgh. And I think what you saw last night was the fact that that's a tough turnaround for any team to go from Sunday to Thursday. But the Eagles were much better equipped to deal with it coming off the kind of game they had in Dallas compared to what Washington went through against Pittsburgh. And you really, really saw that fatigue factor take over in the second half.
That's a great point,
yeah,
Ray. Great point. Are you past worrying about Saquon's touches? Are you past worrying about him wearing out this season, or is it still something that's very much a major worry in your book?
I wouldn't say major worry. I mean, am I concerned about it to the point of monitoring his carries? Yeah, maybe a little bit. You know, I don't get the feeling that he's being overused here, and I think he's being used smartly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a heavy load. I mean, he's averaging about 20 carries rushing attempts a game, which is a significant amount, especially in today's NFL. But he certainly doesn't seem to be suffering by it. And the thing that really amazes me, and I knew he was a really good player. I mean, we all saw him at Penn State, and we saw what he did, you know, playing for some abysmal Giants teams up in New York. But seeing it here now, you're seeing it on a weekly basis, and it's his ability. If he gets through the line of scrimmage, man, can he take off?
That's incredible. You know, I mean,
it's over.
Yeah.
Oh man, I mean, you see him get in the open field. It's hard to believe that you're looking at a 235-pound man. I mean,
does he look faster to you this year? It does feel like this is like the ultimate Saquon. Is this the best version of Saquon you've ever seen? It must be. He's behind the best.
It just feels
like every aspect is that much sharper. I do feel like he's faster, but again,
the other problem, John. He never. It was hard to get through the Giants' offensive line. So.
That's true. That's very true.
I mean, I'm sure there were moments, but not as many as this year.
But the next gen stats come back after these weeks, and he's the second fastest athlete in the entire NFL at 235 pounds.
That's why, Ray, to your point, him at that size doing it is incredible. Ray, let's talk about another. Is it the best? And we were kicking this around earlier. I don't know the answer. You'll certainly have a much better feel than us. Is Quinyon Mitchell the best rookie you've seen the Eagles have? Now, let me frame one thing before you answer. I want to remove Reggie from consideration because he joined a little bit more as a veteran after a couple of years in the USFL. You're older. Okay, forget that. Other than the Reggie thing, is Quinyon Mitchell the best rookie the Eagles have had that you've seen?
Hmm. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I'm going through my
I'm going through my
mental Rolodex here and trying to think. I mean, on that side of the ball, I mean, yeah, maybe. And at that position, you know, I remember, you know, I'm going way, way back. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I remember in 1980 when the Eagles drafted Roynell Young.
Sure.
He started at corner for a whole season on a Super Bowl team.
Sure did.
And played very, very well. And Eric Allen showed it to you right away when he joined. You know, he joined the buddy team. So in terms of cornerbacks and giving you instant impact, where they step right in and within 3 weeks you don't even think about them as a rookie anymore. I mean, it's just, you know, he's just a baller.
I'm putting him in the same breath
as Eric Allen, who in my view is a Hall of Famer.
No,
so that's
question.
Pretty good.
No question.
But you know, none of this surprises me. I mean, I really liked him. I mean, we talked before the draft, and you asked me who do you want the Eagles to take, and I said my number one guy is Quinyon Mitchell.
Yeah.
Given the combination of his ability along with Eagles' need. I mean, the Eagles clearly needed help in the secondary, and Quinyon Mitchell, to me, after what I was evaluating, was head and shoulders above anybody that was coming out in this draft. The only guy that was even close to him was Cooper DeJean.
Yeah.
And they wound up getting both of them. So, I mean, yeah, I think that people, what you're seeing with this guy now is, I mean, he is, it's not just, oh, I'm, you know, he looks good now, but let's wait and see. No, I think you see.
Yeah.
I think you see week after week, and now he's drawing big-time receivers. And that little sequence that they put together of him playing Terry McLaurin, who's a really good receiver, and covering him all over the field. I mean, Terry McLaurin was invisible when he was on Quinyon Mitchell's side of the field. And if you have a rookie that's playing at that level, you really got something.
It is next level. We don't really remember to talk about Cooper DeJean because Quinyon is so outstanding. How close is Cooper bringing up the tail end of this? He's the other rookie starter, and he's been pretty good too in a really tough spot with a two-way go, and he's also back there returning punts.
He also basically didn't have a training camp.
Yeah.
He got hurt right away.
Starting late on top of it all. How good has he been comparatively to Quinyon?
Well, yeah, it's tough because the responsibilities are different. I mean, Quinyon is a border corner, and that's what he is, and that's what he's going to be forever, I suspect. And you got Cooper DeJean, who they're using in multiple ways, but mostly as a slot defender. And so they're different kinds of responsibilities. But the fact is, I mean, week in and week out, they're two of your best defensive players, and not only can they cover, but they can really tackle. You know, yeah. I mean, they're both really good tacklers. I'm going to say something now. People are going to get mad at me for saying it, but okay. I don't like him returning punts. I really don't. Seth Joyner and I were talking about this. We were watching the game together last week, the Dallas game. The thing is, it's very tempting to put him back there because he's very sure-handed. I mean, you never worry about him fumbling the kick because you see the way he catches it. He's very secure. He's exactly what you want back there. And he's also a good enough runner that he can break a play for you now and again. But you know what? I mean, to me, he's like almost too valuable to risk back there, you know? As good as he has been, and he has been, he's been really good at everything he's done. But I get nervous every time I see him getting ready to field a punt.
Yeah.
Because to me, he's so valuable to the defense that I would try and have somebody else. I would try to put somebody else back there.
It's to be considered.
Right now they got a winning combination,
yeah,
and he's being really good at it.
Yep.
But boy, I don't know. The risk reward for me is a little troubling.
I understand, Ray. And
I
of course, where
you.
It gets tricky is, do they do that in the interim prior to Covey coming back? You know,
it's so different when you're running. Well, we'll talk about
it. It's a tough one.
Hey,
Ray, let's talk about Jalen for a moment. How do you assess his performance last night?
Good in the sense that, I mean, slow to start, obviously, but, I mean, he was, what, four for his first 10, and then he finished up, he was 14 for his last 18. So once he got it going, and once the Eagles had control of the game, you know, he was pretty much in command of everything. And, you know, and I one of the big plays of the game was the stretch play where he gets you the first down, you know, where he's running, and it's a third down play. And it looks like he's going to get stopped short of the sticks, and he gives you that great effort where he, you know, drives through the tackle, dives, fully extends, and gets the ball out there to the sticks and gets you the first down. Now, they probably would have gone, they probably would have tush-pushed it on the next play and gotten it anyway. But where the game was at that point, that's a pretty big play. That's really a pretty big play. And it doesn't show up in his passing stats. But in the ebb and flow of the game, I mean, that was a pretty big play, and I thought he gave that to you. And, you know, he was just real rock solid in the second half. And again, you know, doesn't turn the ball over. And that's really the key to this offense, is if they, with the players that they have and with the playmakers that they have, if they don't turn the ball over, you're not going to stop this offense. You're just not. I mean, they've got too many weapons and they're too good, and Barkley has totally changed the dynamic of this offense.
Totally.
And so, I mean, you got to – if they start off the way they did this earlier part of the year where they're making stupid mistakes and they're turning the ball over, well, yeah, they can get stopped like anybody can get stopped. But if they can just take those mistakes out of their game, which recently they have done – they're going to be a very, very hard team to play against.
Yeah. Hey, Ray, two final things. The first, I don't know if you've thought about it. I said it, I think it was a couple of days ago. If Jalen Hurts is a starting quarterback for a long time and avoids injury, he's going to have a really legitimate shot to break the NFL's career touchdown record. I mean, it's like he gets one a game. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And then some.
It really, I mean, as long as the tush-push stays in, which obviously gives him an advantage, it's something to just keep in mind. It's years from now, but he has a shot.
He's going to completely devastate that record.
Well, he's going to devastate the quarterback. He's going to devastate the quarterback record
at this clip.
Yeah,
it's not even a contest.
It's unbelievable. All right.
Cam Newton was way up there.
Yeah, well, he's already done something that no quarterback in the history of the NFL has done, which is have four consecutive seasons with 10 or more rushing touchdowns. No quarterback has ever done that. I mean, you know, going back to the, you know, back in the days with, you know, Otto Graham and Elway and Staubach and Mike Vicks and the Randall County. I mean, you had some quarterbacks that ran it into the end zone, too. I mean, it's not exactly like he's invented it. But four consecutive years with 10 or more rushing touchdowns has never been done by any quarterback until this guy did it.
Wild.
So, yeah, I mean, he's getting into a whole different category now. And part of it is the construct of the offense. Part of it is the tush push that they've come up with to tremendous effect. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, if he plays long term, yeah, he's going to take that record and just put it out of sight.
Hey Ray, final thing. We appreciate you hopping on with us on a Friday. I know it's a different schedule for you. So this topic is going to start coming into focus over the next week and over the next 2 months. Who's a better team, the Eagles or the Detroit Lions? What's your assessment slightly over halfway through the year? Who's a better team?
I think it's very close. I think it's very close. I have become a believer in the Lions. I think they're legit. I think they've demonstrated it now over years. It's not just weeks. We're talking about a couple really good years that put back to back. But I'll tell you right now nobody in the NFC is playing better than the Eagles. Okay, and you know, I know the Lions are half a game up, and the Lions are playing really well. But there's a little bit of an up. There has been a little bit of a, I don't want to say a wavering, but a little bit of an up and down. I mean, you know, Goff threw five picks last week, so there's been that. Not that I think that's going to recur, but right now, on both sides of the ball, with the way the Eagles are playing on offense and defense, right now they are the most complete team, and they're playing the most consistent football. When the biggest thing you have to worry about is Jake Elliott, I'd say you're in pretty good shape, because I don't think, you know, I think we all know what Jake Elliott's capable of. You know, I'm a little concerned. You know, last night was certainly a bad night, and he's missed five field goals this year, which is very uncharacteristic. But I do believe over the long haul, in the second half of the year, you need a big kick. He's going to make it for you. The rest of it on offense, I mean, their defense is just playing tremendous. And you saw what happened with, you know, they made Daniels last night look like a rookie.
Yep.
You know, and he hasn't looked like a rookie since like week three.
He looked
bad. The rib is probably part of it, but this is, you know, we've seen this in Philadelphia before. We've seen the canny old defensive coordinator turn rookie quarterbacks inside out. Jim Johnson did it all the time, and you see Vic Fangio do it here. I mean, with Daniels last night, what it really was he took away his first read. You know, I mean, Daniels, who looked so poised and so in command, all the early part of the year. You saw last night when you got up against a defense where you have a guy that's calling coverages, where he's taken away the first read, where the first place he's supposed to go isn't there now. And now he has to start to try and create with the team putting some pressure on him. All of a sudden, he starts to look like a rookie. That's what Fangio gives you. So that's why last night, look, I'm not saying, you know, people are saying, oh, Daniels has hit the wall, and what we saw early in the year, now he's not really that good. No, he is that good. He is that good. He just stepped into a really tough spot against a really smart defensive coordinator last night, and it showed.
Ray, we love having you on the program, my man. We look forward to it the rest of the season, a season that could go all the way to mid-February. Have a great weekend, Ray. We'll talk to you coming up soon. Thanks, pal.
Okay, Joe. Take care. Bye-bye.
Right.
Thanks, Ray.
Diddy. Ray Didinger. Let's go back to the phones. Talk to Justin right now. Justin in Tennessee. What's up, pal?
What's happening, ladies and fellas? How y'all doing this Victory Friday?
Super, Justin.
Oh, man. Man, I'm telling you what, that was just an awesome, awesome win last night. Seeing Saquon go off like that and the way he was running, like after that first touchdown. I mean, he was running like a bat out of hell. Man.
Yeah, for sure.
He was tickled to death. And the thing I was wanting to hit on, y'all just really touched on all over with Diddy, man, talking about Quinyon and Cooper. I remember back during the draft, I really didn't know a whole lot about Quinyon. I watch a ton of college football, but I don't watch Toledo. But you can ask James, I was all in on Cooper DeJean. I wanted him in the first. And when we got him in the second, man, I was tickled to death. And now,
well, and credit to Howie who moved up for him, Justin. You know, some people might forget that, but that wasn't just sit back and wait for the guy. That was, he's still there. You're getting close.
We got to go.
Read the board, too. There was a lot of reporting that Baltimore, or whoever was going to take, I think it was Baltimore, was going to take him with the next pick, too.
By the way, Eagles, Howie did the same thing with Jalen Carter. He moved up one spot for Jalen Carter. I mean, that stuff is real.
Yeah,
they released that awesome draft video, like in the war room and everything. And Jeffrey's like, "So what do you think?" And they were scared to death Baltimore was going to get him. And when they didn't, Howie just went into kill mode. He's like, "Get him!" You know, they were doing everything right then and there.
Well, so, I think a lot of GMs, Justin, got to be kicking themselves because the way Quinyon looks, it certainly appears to me like he should have been taken in the top five.
Oh yeah,
I mean he could be the next Jalen Ramsey for all we know. I mean I don't know, but like he projects to me like a guy that's going to be a multiple All Pro.
Yeah, and then to think of it, he was the first corner taken, but he was taken in the 20s, you know.
Correct.
People questioning the kid from Clemson, Kool-Aid McKinstry and all that, and Cooper, who's going to be taken first, and he falls to us first. And I remember Ray saying, you know, he liked Quinyon better than the other corners. And it's just, my God, man, it's
so
awesome.
He's great.
I just wasn't ready to go there because he was from Toledo. I didn't expect that he would have that success early because the small school, the level of competition – doesn't matter. He is that amazing.
Well, it doesn't matter if you're that good. I mean, it makes it harder to evaluate sometimes on the film, but the reality is he went to the Senior Bowl. People saw him at the Senior Bowl and said, this guy looks great.
And that's the trick. If you can make that leap, if you have the confidence as a talent evaluator to say, okay, my eyes tell me this guy has the goods against the best of the best. Doesn't matter. At Toledo, he didn't play against it because that's a really small sample.
Yeah, John, what they said about him at the Senior Bowl is that, like, you know, they, you know, not a lot of, you know, corners in the college press. They're like, we want you to do it. Did it. And they were like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
well, he was also someone who could have left Toledo for all the top schools. Like Saban talked about wanting him. Kirby Smart wanted him and all that, but he committed to Toledo and stuck with the guys who believed in him.
Yeah, I admire that, you know, especially in an NIL age when I assume he made a lot less money at Toledo as a senior than he would have at Alabama.
Yeah,
as a
maybe
senior.
That does not happen anymore with the NIL stuff. It does change the lay of the land.
Unless he was the only guy at Toledo, so all the NIL money went to him and Alabama couldn't spread it out to him. Who the heck knows? Let's talk to Ed in Phoenixville right now. Ed, what's going on, dude?
I have to prostrate myself with shame to this group. I consider myself a pretty good Eagles fan.
You fell asleep?
Have to hold myself accountable. Third quarter.
Disgraceful.
That's tough.
I woke up to my TV's home screen like updating at 2 a.m. My wife is calling me saying, get the bleep up here, go to bed. I knew you're going to fall asleep, and she's right. But
Let me tell you when I slept last night. You ready? 4 a.m.
What?
To 4:45 a.m.
Why?
I thought I had it bad from like 1 to 3:30 or whatever.
So I took
20.
Oh my God.
I do that frequently, Devin. So I took, not that frequently, but it happens. So I took a big nap yesterday afternoon. Got to be ready to stay up late. Obviously, unusual schedule in the mornings. So I took a nap yesterday from about 12 to 4 p.m.
Yeah. Well, that's a long one. That's not a nap.
It is a long one, and that's not good for you. And so I figured I'd probably get to bed around 1 last night, you know, wired from the game, long nap, but like eventually doze off. I just couldn't sleep. So I'm just lying in the hotel room, and finally at 4 a.m., I switched to my third pillow, and I slept for 45 minutes, and that
was it. There's nothing worse than tossing and turning.
I just thought, let me try pillow number 3. Maybe it's better. I swear to God.
Oh, I've done that. I flipped my pillow around and all that. Yeah, I feel you.
Anyway, Ed, what do you got on the game you barely saw?
No, I felt like the guy who didn't do his homework. Like, I was on hold, and I was rushing through, like, the rest of the second half. So I'm pretty well caught up now. But a couple of things. It's like, I haven't heard a lot of people talk about it, but just it kind of is sort of a microcosm of how much this team enjoys playing with each other. Like, every punt cover, I see like Sidney Brown and Keely Ringo running down there with like with their hair on fire, and then once they get there, they're up there, like, they're hop skipping, they're having fun. It's almost like a little game between the two of them. Like, they're just trying
to be
the best gunners they can, and these guys can start. Like, they are starters, but we have such a depth of talent in the secondary finally, and I think it's great that they just embrace those.
That's how those guys get any playing time. You know,
that's your only chance all week long to unleash it, and they get a chance to go down, and they're racing one another. Really, that becomes like you pull out on the sideline view, you can see which guy gets there first, and I'm sure that's in that special teams meeting, they prioritize, all right, guys, we're going to everyone run through the end zone, every single kick, no matter where we are on the field. First guy there, we're going to give you, this week, you get free round of golf or whatever it is. They probably have awards. They probably have, even the guys will throw, you know, up money in a pot or something along those
John
lines.
John promoting biggest illegal hit. Activity.
Sure. Yeah. Somewhat.
Sure. Yeah.
Who can get there first? Who's got the biggest play on special teams this week?
All right. You know, by the way, so this team checking a lot of boxes. And John, what you're just alluding to is a lot of the type of boxes they check. Tenacity, effort, determination, all skill. Sirianni talked last night pretty extensively. It was an interesting thing. James, I want to play the fourth, what we call in the industry here, Sirianni 4. James, it's different than what I previously told you. So something Sirianni said after the game last night, an aspect of the team he really likes, and I admire this team for having it. I admire Sirianni for drilling it into them. I think he's pretty consistent with his messaging. Let's listen to Sirianni after the game last night.
What does a great defense do for a team's mentality?
Yeah, again, when you, I think similar to like when you're running the ball like we're running, we really pride ourselves. I think the since I've been here the last 4 years, when we've played our best, we've played with extreme physical toughness, mental toughness, physical toughness, relentless effort. And I think that when you play, you know, that you know, you think about the run game when you do that, you talk about the defense. Again, like what part of those things when you describe defense, good team defense, again, it talks about, we start with being on the same page, but everything else is about effort, physicality, right? Toughness, the way you strike blocks, the way you get off blocks, the way you tackle, all those things, fundamentals and toughness. And so it just brings that, it just brings that light of the, we have tough guys, like we're tough on this football team because we got tough guys. That's so important. You can't be tough if you don't got guys that are tough. And so I think it just emphasizes what we want to be as a team, the physical toughness, the mental toughness, the relentless effort, all those things umbrella over the word tough in our mind. And that's a core value of ours, and it's huge to the football team. Because, I mean, you know, just like a big catch or a big run, a big hit does the same thing, right? Whether it's finishing somebody on the sideline as an offensive player or getting a big hit or a pushback on the defensive line. And we'll highlight the crap out of those on, when we review this tape, we'll look at those, and we just want to build on that.
I know a lot of people probably won't vibe with this, but I got to tell you, I'm really starting to vibe with this Sirianni thing. I really am. I think he's doing a great job. And Elliot talked earlier about potential coach of the year. I think he's infused them with a lot of good stuff. Now, look, there's a lot of talent here. Don't get me wrong. But I think he's doing a really good job.